Welcome to Designed for More, brought to you by Common Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. Join Dr. Timothy Jennings, a renowned expert in psychiatry, neuroscience, and spiritual well-being, as he explores the connections between mind, body, spirit, and relationships.
Hello, and welcome to Designed for More, sponsored by Common Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. I'm Dr. Tim Jennings, and I'm joined today by Brett Durbin, one of the chaplains here at the clinic. And our topic today is faith, healing, and chronic disease. Faith, healing, and chronic disease. As a pastor, do you have much, you know, what is the state of your experience in the church with the question of, you know, prayer, faith, and healing?
I mean, there's a lot of places to go with that, you know. I feel like I guess I would ask more of a, what specifically are you asking about in that?
Well, I guess the topic, faith, healing, and chronic disease, what happens when you pray for healing? What would you as a pastor, the Bible says in James, if somebody's sick, call the elders, anoint them with oil, pray over them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My understanding of that is that in first century Palestine, oil was a medicinal. You put oil on the wounds. When the Good Samaritan helped the person who was beaten, he put oil on his wounds.
Yeah.
So what I hear the Bible saying is, do what is medically and scientifically healing and pray.
Yes, yes.
Not one or the other. Pray, but don't do anything that is scientifically and medically known to help. Pray and only trust God to heal or not.
Mm-hmm.
Or do medical stuff, but don't pray.
Yeah.
That I hear the principle is do everything in your power that you know about physiology and what's healthy, mm-hmm, and what's healing. Clean the dirt out of the wound, put ointments on it, antiseptics, sew up wounds, everything you can do that can bring healing, and pray.
Yeah.
Is that your understanding too?
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
So has the question, though, of prayer and specifically over a physical illness and healing ever been, in your experience, tied to whether people have faith or not in such a way that it often, in my view, it becomes discouraging?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. A lot. And sadly, I don't know. I'm sure it is blatantly taught that way at times, but I don't know where that comes from 100%, other than we see it as a weakness in faith. You know, it's like, okay, well, I prayed for this and God didn't heal me or heal my mom or heal my brother, heal whatever. And they take it on as a, you know, this is a weakness in my faith because God didn't heal someone.
So I'm going to tell you, I think it's a helpful conversation to have. And I'm going to tell you, you said you're not sure where it comes from. Let's see if we can figure out where it comes from.
Yeah.
I think it comes from straight Christian misinformation,
yeah,
and ignorance about what faith is.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, when I ask what faith is,
mm-hmm,
I get answers of something that's not faith.
Yeah.
What answers are common that you get?
Oh, gosh. I mean, there's a lot of different things. I mean,
believing without evidence.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it's
a blind faith thing, is a lot of times what you hear.
This is not faith. I had a class I taught recently, and a person actually said, well, isn't it true in heaven we won't have faith anymore? And I said, so when we get to heaven and meet Jesus, we'll say, before I met you, Jesus, I used to have a lot of faith in you, but now that I've met you, I don't have faith in you anymore.
I've lost
faith. And they said yes. They said yes because,
oh, gosh.
No, they gave the explanation. This is their explanation, because the Bible says that we have faith in things we hope for and the things that we don't see. And once you see him, it's not faith anymore.
Oh, okay.
This is the answer.
Yeah, I see the train he's on and why that was his answer, but that's sad.
So we had a further conversation. That's not faith.
Yeah.
You know, faith, you know, as you know, in the Bible, the word translated faith in the New Testament is the same word translated belief or trust.
Trust, yeah, yeah.
And operationally, the salvation aspect of that translates best into English as trust.
Mm-hmm.
Because the devils believe, same word.
Yeah.
And tremble. They believe. Yes, the devil. Do you believe that Jesus is Lord and Savior? Well, we know they do, because the demoniac says, we know who you are, the Son of the Most High God.
Yeah.
So we know they believe that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe in the second coming of Christ? Well, he knows his time is short and he's running around like,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So, you know, he believes in that.
Yeah.
So he's a believer.
Yeah.
Does that mean he's saved? No. Why? Because believing isn't the issue.
Yeah.
It's do you trust?
It's trusting.
He doesn't trust.
Yeah. And I mean, and some of this actually came from interactions with you is I always taught faith and trust as being synonymous, but now I've made it much clearer even when I'd like teach a class here at Honey Lake or whatever I'm doing, or even just talking with a patient, is when I use the word faith, I almost always say, or trust.
Yes.
You know, so just so we're clear, like, hey, let's, because those in our brains and in our minds, we don't hear those the same.
So faith, you know? Faith often means what the little boy is famous for saying, believe in what you know ain't so. Mm-hmm. Convincing yourself to have confidence in something that you have no evidence for and actually believe isn't true.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's what a lot of people think faith is.
Yeah.
What they call blind faith. In fact, I remember maybe the person who asked me the question read this as well in a Bible study guide that we have, we don't have faith to believe the sky is over our head because we can look up and see it.
Mm-hmm.
We have faith to believe in the God who lives beyond the sky because we can't see him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I actually, after I read that, asked the question, does that mean when we see Jesus, we'll actually say that? Well, I used to have faith, but now I don't.
Yeah.
See, that's a silly definition. No, and so how do we explain then the Hebrews text, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. The evidence of things not seen. Let's take that part up. You have a child, he's in second grade, and while he's away at school, you buy him some presents. You wrap him up, you put him in a closet. He comes home and you say, Daddy's bought you some presents. They're in the closet. Go get them. Will your child go? Will he go run to the closet?
Mm-hmm.
Will he go with foreboding? Well, you think there's really presents there? I mean, Dad said there are. This could be a trick. Maybe there's nothing there.
Is he lying to me?
Seriously, will he go? Will he go with doubt? Will he go with doubt? Or will he go with, he already jumping up and down with joy?
Yeah.
Is he already rejoicing in the presence?
Yeah, the anticipation is already strong, yeah.
Okay, does he have any evidence of presence?
No.
Does he have any substance? Has he touched them yet?
No. Nope.
So he's rejoicing in something he has not seen,
mm-hmm,
and has no evidence for. Those are the presents in the closet. That's what Hebrew's saying. Question, when you told him to go, there's presents in the closet, does he have evidence of your love, your reliability, and your trustworthiness? Is that with or without evidence?
It's with.
Ah, so he doesn't. So faith is not without evidence in the one who gave you the promises. The things we have no evidence for are the presence in the closet, eternal life, earth made new, mansions in glory. These are the presents in the closet, and we are to be just like the little boy, celebrating and rejoicing on our way to receive the presents. Okay,
yeah.
But what's happened is many people take the view that we have no evidence for our faith.
Yeah.
No, that's the whole purpose of Scripture. Paul wrote in Romans 1 that God's divine nature, seeing what he has made, the book of nature, all the providences of God, it's all there to reveal and ultimately the life of Christ and his self-sacrificial death on our behalf. It's all evidence to show you he is love, he is trustworthy, he's reliable. So our faith is never without evidence, always based on evidence. And the more evidence you get, think about your son growing up with you, and the more evidence of your reliability and the greater his experience in your love, his trust deepens, his confidence deepens. And so when we meet Christ, eternity, our faith and confidence deepen. So that's how reality works. So then how do we get that with the healing?
Yeah.
How do we get that with the healing? And this is what I wrote in one of my books, and it's blown a lot of people away. Miracle healings, or miracles of any kind, including miracle healings, are almost always for the weak in faith.
Yeah.
Through the strong in faith. The miracles are not for people who have strong faith. And we have taught the opposite, that if you have strong faith, you get a miracle. It's almost always the case, you do not get a miracle for you when your faith is strong.
Yeah.
You don't get one. Why? Because you don't need the miracle to keep your faith strong. I don't need a miracle. Your son doesn't need a miracle to know he can trust his daddy.
Yeah.
And when you actually have strong faith and know Jesus, you don't need a miracle. This is Job.
Yeah.
All this tragedy happened. He had questions, lots of questions. He didn't understand what was happening correctly, why it was happening, what's this about, okay? And he had to be corrected on some of his misunderstandings. But none of his misunderstandings caused him to break faith. He actually said, even if God were the one to kill me, yet will I trust him.
Yeah.
Okay? And so he didn't need evidence, a miracle to trust God. He'd already established that in his previous life experiences with God. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So.
Can I expand on that a little bit too?
Yeah.
It's saying the same thing you're saying, but I think one thing I've recognized, and there's only been a handful of times in my life, I have been able to witness some things that I cannot explain outside of God, but they always, and I mean this is without fail, were tied to the spreading of the gospel, the someone else coming to faith.
I want to give some examples from scripture about this.
Yeah.
So I think that's where you're going with that. Mm-hmm. And so to make my case, I don't want to just declare it. I want to show evidence of it. I gave Job.
Yeah.
Okay. Gideon asked for the miracle of the fleeces. You know the story.
Mm-hmm.
Was he asking for that because his faith was strong or was weak and needed encouraging?
It was weak.
And it needed encouraging.
Yeah.
Now, okay, here's examples of great faith. Daniel in the lion's den. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and they both personally, all four of them personally benefited from the miracle. Was that miracle actually for their benefit, though? Was it for them? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, before Nebuchadnezzar, before they get thrown in, they actually said, we know that our God can deliver us from the fire, but even if he doesn't, we won't bow.
Yeah, we're good.
Did they need the miracle to stay faithful?
Nope.
The miracle was not for them. It was through them for Nebuchadnezzar, and all of the billions through history have read that story and had their faith strengthened.
Mm-hmm.
The Apostle Paul had a health problem. He prayed over and over again, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And the Lord basically said, stop praying about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he didn't heal that.
Yeah.
But did many people get healed through the Apostle Paul?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so I think that the case is very clear. When you actually have great faith, you go to God and you say, as Paul did, Lord, I'm suffering with this health problem. I'd really, really appreciate if there's something that I can do that can bring healing, show me. I'll be glad to use the medicinals or whatever I can do, change my diet or exercise, whatever I need to do. I'll participate in your plan. But Lord, if it's one of those that needs your touch right now, I'm really asking if it's in your will, bring healing. But Lord, even if you don't, that's okay. And if you don't get the healing, it's pretty much a guarantee that your faith is strong enough, you don't need the healing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I have lots of stories I could tell you that demonstrate this in real life, where the weak need it and the strong don't. But the strong often do get miracles like Shadrach because of the influence it have on the weak.
Mm-hmm.
But like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they didn't need it to stay faithful.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so when we go back to that then we can, for our audience, pray for your miracle, do what you know is healthy, but then be at peace. And then you can ask, okay, Lord, I guess as in the case of Paul said it helped keep him humble.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Help keep him remembering every day that he is weak and the Lord is strong.
Yeah.
I can tell you, as I've gotten older, my body is not strong like it used to be, and it's helping me remember I am weak and he is strong.
Yeah.
And, here's a miracle I'd like to pray for, except I don't, because I know that I already know the answer. There's certain things you pray for, the Lord will not answer certain things.
Yeah.
Because he's already told you the answer.
Mm-hmm.
At least I believe, unless maybe, if you can give me a evidence that maybe I could start praying for this, maybe, but I don't pray that the Lord will take my consciousness and put it back into my 25-year-old body.
Yeah.
I don't pray for that. But I know I've thought of that. Boy, I wish I had my 25-year-old body with all the knowledge and experience I have now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I wish I'd have known then. Life would be so much more fun. I don't think God's going to answer that prayer for me right now.
No.
But God's prayer answer would be, when I come again, that mortal you're in will put on immortality.
Yeah.
You're going to get such an upgrade then, but mm-hmm. not now.
Yeah.
So I don't pray for that because I know that one.
Yeah.
So audience, if you're praying, always surrender to the will.
Yeah.
Listen quietly for the answer. That's another thing. Do you, after you ask, do you take that some time and quietly, like Elijah, listen for the still small voice coming back?
Yeah.
Or do you just talk? Because the Lord may, if you're listening, have that quiet impression that now's not the time. I've had people who were praying for healing, but they didn't get it. So they went through the medical system, and the medical system, they're getting treatment. And through that, they actually witnessed a doctor, a nurse, some whatever, and brought them to the Lord that they wouldn't have done had they would never have been in that position that the sickness had been cured.
A lot. Yeah, that happens a lot.
Yes. And so I hear the Lord saying, I need a friend. I need a friend who's willing to suffer with this problem to meet this person in this situation. See, if you meet them, you know, in a restaurant, they won't hear you.
Mm-hmm.
They need to see you with joy in your heart while you're suffering. So they'll open their heart to hear the joy I want to bring them.
Yeah.
I mean, the Lord said, can I rely on you to help me reach my other daughter over here, my other son over there? I think there's a lot of this that happens. And those who have the great faith, yes, they don't want to suffer. They want to be healed, but they also allow their lives to have a higher purpose.
So what do you say to someone who is, I think that's a great way to even to address the question of, you know, like, why are some people healed while others struggle? Or why is someone dealing with this lifelong chronic illness? You know, use Paul as a great example, which I think is wonderful, because we can look at Paul and say, well, he went through it, you know, but also, how do you encourage someone that's going through that? Like, what would you tell them in the midst of that? Because sometimes it's hard to see that as you're walking.
So my first starting point when somebody's got an illness is to step back and as accurately as possible diagnose what it is, the illness. Yeah. And diagnose as accurately as possible what is the cause.
Yes.
See, if somebody's got, you know, lung problems and they're smoking 2 packs a day and they start praying for healthy lungs and a miracle, but they keep smoking 2 packs a day. I had actually had a patient years ago who was angry at God because her lungs weren't getting better. And she's been praying every day for better lungs. And I actually said to her, have you stopped smoking yet? Well, she said, no. Okay. So are we praying for something that is, we're asking God to do something that's going directly against what we're doing?
Yeah.
And I know actually that's kind of almost sadly humorous what I said there, because it's so objectively kind of contradictory. Why are you praying for healthy lungs when you're actively hurting them?
Yeah.
How many people are doing this with certain chronic illnesses when they're actively hurting themselves with their diet and lifestyle?
Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think it's easy for us with cigarettes to say, well, we all know that that's bad. Whereas, I mean, a lot of these design laws that people are completely trampling, and they have issues that could probably be, at least a lot of them could be remedied just by changing your lifestyle.
And so chronic illness questions, I would actually say diagnose what's wrong. And then if you're asking God's intervention, let me ask you this question. Will God use his power to overrule you and your choices of what you're harming in your own life?
No.
Or will God respect your choice to continue to harm yourself, like the cigarette smoking example?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're asking for healing, have you considered praying this prayer? And this won't be true for everybody listening.
Yeah.
There may be people out here born with a genetic problem of some sort, okay? But for many people listening with health problems, this is true. Would you pray this prayer? Lord, if there's anything in my life that I'm doing that's in violation of your laws of health, that I'm actively doing something, I don't even fully understand it, help me understand it so that I can align with you and bring my life in harmony with the laws that you've actually built life to operate upon. Here's a very simple one. In this world in which we live, one of the requirements for life is 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. And if you don't get that, there's all types of circadian rhythm, hormone elements, nutrition, weight management, things that happen, as well as brain function that contributes to illness and disease.
Yeah.
And 33% of Americans are chronically sleep deprived because they either overwork or they stay up late, whatever. And so this would be a simple example where somebody might not be getting the physiological rest that is necessary for a finite being. Once you burn energy, you must rest and recover, or else you'll exhaust and burn out.
Yeah.
So this could be just a simple example where somebody is tired, fatigued, and they're not getting the rest they need. Another would be, there's two types of rest that God has given us. One is the physical rest, which is primarily sleep. But you can also physically rest after, you know, an athletic event and go chill on the bench.
Yeah. Okay?
But the other one is the spiritual rest, where we are to put away the burdens and the cares and the planning and the organizing and the caring and the stressing and the running of the business. And where every 7 days we're set aside for a whole day.
Yeah.
Where we rest our minds in the Lord and we reconnect with Him and we experience that peace and that joy. And very few Christians I know take 24 hours aside each week with a Sabbath with the Lord. They go to church, but then they're right back at the laundry, the lawn, whatever. Okay. And thus they're not actually resting. And so I would tell each person, with your disease, whatever it is, diagnose what's actually wrong, and then inquire, is there actually of the Lord? Lord, I would love your healing, but is there anything in my life that I could change to bring myself in harmony with the laws that life are built upon? Maybe I need to get the highly processed foods out and get some more actually foods the way you created them to go into our body in.
Yeah.
With better nutrition. Maybe I need to change the times that I'm eating. I'm eating right before bed at night, and then I don't, whatever. And that's actually been shown not to be very healthy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's lots of just simple little things that people may or may not know that are not healthy. And so with the healing question, they pray for health, but are they actively like the doing something? I think that's a fair place to start. That's where I start. So you ask me where I start.
Yeah.
Identify what's wrong, and then what are the things in your life that you're doing that are within reach for you to change that could promote health and healing.
Yeah.
Because you can't have health while violating the laws of health. However, you also cannot avoid the healing that comes when you harmonize with them. And if you harmonize them, you will get healthier.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And sadly, though, this is not the mindset of our current, the majority, predominantly, of our current healthcare system. Our current healthcare system does not actually promote this way of thinking. Our current healthcare system should be better, in my view, not called a healthcare system.
Yeah,
it should be called a disease management system.
Mm.
The system and audience, think about going to your doctor. There are some really good-hearted holistic doctors out there that are trying to teach their patients how to live healthy. And I love that and I applaud that. So I want to affirm them. Mm-hmm. But the landscape of the big system is primarily focused on identifying your symptoms and then giving you a treatment to manage your symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
If you're obese, you can get an injection.
Yeah.
Diabetic, whatever. You don't need to look at the highly processed foods, the sedentary lifestyle, the lack of sleep, high mental stress, all the things that drive that, we don't need to look at. We just need to take a shot or a pill or whatever.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm with you 100% on that. It's just we're in kind of a sad state of affairs with all of that.
So I'm not trying to change the system because I don't believe it's worth putting in energy there.
Yeah.
I'm trying to help our audience recognize that you have your own individuality, your own mind, your own capacity to think, your own capacity to reason, and there are actual laws built into the operations of your body and the world around you, law of gravity, laws of physics, laws of health, and when you understand them, you can make an intelligent choice to harmonize yourself with those, and you will get healthier.
Yeah.
That's what I want people to understand. So with the diseases, look at that question.
Yeah.
And then let's look at the situation now, though. They've got something they didn't do to themselves.
Yeah.
It's something, maybe it's a cancer. Maybe the cancer came, and I would say all disease is a breach of the laws of health, not necessarily one you did to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But you may have been exposed to Three Mile Island radiation leak.
Mm-hmm.
Something that was put in your water, municipal water supply, you didn't know was there, and you drank it. It will have a physiologic consequence, maybe, and you get cancer.
Yeah.
Okay. What do you do? My view is you do everything you know within reasonable scientific evidence that will help you and pray.
Mm-hmm.
Pray. You remove everything that contributes, all the toxins, get your body in the best condition, get good on a highly anti-inflammatory diet, improve your immune system, all this kind of stuff. Get good sleep, get good rest, go to the doctor, pray.
Yeah.
And trust the Lord.
I like it. How much do you see, you know, coming from, I mean, you're a medical doctor, psychiatrist. How much do you see with, I feel like mental health and what people would call like physical health are, one is treated very different, you know, and being mental health, and maybe it's just misunderstanding of it or whatever. I think there's a lot of factors that play into that. But for you, how often do you see just getting those design laws in place and changing the lifestyle, the nutrition, the exercise, the sleep? How many times does that actually, at some level, heal the issue?
So it depends on what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. If it's schizophrenia, not.
Yeah. Yeah.
If it is a family history of Alzheimer's dementia, mm-hmm. and you do lifestyle stuff, the data is very clear. You won't get it.
Yeah.
The late onset. There is a early onset familial form that is less than 5% that is autosomal dominant, genetically determined, and if that's a very small percent, less than 5%. 95% of Alzheimer's is a late onset form. After age 60, 65.
Yeah.
If it's early onset, 40, 45, 50, that's something different. And that's a genetic, and there's really not much to do about that at this point in our understanding. But the other one is all lifestyle driven.
Yeah.
Even if you have genes, those genes that for the late onset form are only genes that make you vulnerable, more sensitive to the things you're doing in your lifestyle that then cause the cascade of events for the late onset. And if you have a healthy lifestyle, then you won't actually get it, even with the family history of the late onset. That's what the data shows. So it depends on what we're talking about. Depression, a study done in young men, 18 to 25, who met clinical criteria for major depressive episode. The only intervention they did for them in this study, they randomized into two groups, okay? The only intervention they did with the group, with the one, was they put them on an anti-inflammatory Mediterranean diet. No drugs, no therapy. They just changed their diet. 36% of them achieved full remission.
Wow.
Full remission. Depression gone with just the diet change. 36%. Well, you know what percentage typically reach a remission with an antidepressant? About 35%.
Yeah. Say, I thought it was about the same.
About 35% in an initial study of an untreated population group, not treatment resistant group. Yeah. So why would that die? Because that's a lifestyle factor. What is it that drives depression? What drives depression is inflammation in the body primarily is driving it. And anything that causes inflammation, unhealthy food and unhealthy diets can do that, but also negative and pessimistic thinking activates your stress cascade. And when you activate your stress cascade, you turn on your immune system and it increases inflammation in your body. So chronic mental stress can do it, but people with low mental stress but eat a very unhealthy diet and don't exercise, they kick up inflammation and they can drive it. Sleep deprivation can cause it. So a lot of wide variety of things can do it. But in this particular study, the healthy diet reduced inflammatory cascades for a variety of reasons. One, the foods themselves were no longer introducing inflammation. Highly processed foods are inflammatory. Your body responds to that with inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
That was reduced. But additionally, the healthy foods you eat make the gut bacteria change in your gut. We have different gut bacteria and the bacteria eat different foods themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And they're eating the food you eat. And when you eat highly processed foods, you get a different population of bacteria in your gut that are not healthy for you and contribute to the increased sense of stress on your body. And this causes, and when you're under stress meaning like that fight or flight sense, mm-hmm. that urgency sense. Okay. You're signaling your body you're in a fight or flight situation. And if you're in a fight or, and primitively speaking, as an example, you go into that fight or flight situation when you're being chased by a wolf or a bear or a lion,
mm-hmm.
and your body kicks on the immune system, because if you have to fight and survive, there's bite marks and claw marks. And so when you're stressing, you're kicking the immune system to prepare for microscopic organisms that might invade. And one additional thing happens if you fight the bear or the lion and you survive, you're likely to be bleeding and dehydrating. So your body also, during this high stress time, which is supposed to be just while you're in that acute situation and you get away and things are supposed to turn down. Okay?
Yeah.
But while you're in that acute situation, your body also loosens up the gut lining so you can absorb water and hydrate. That's survival. See how that works?
Yeah.
But you're chronically stressed or chronically eating a bad diet and you're kicking up the inflammatory cascades, your body's inflamed and your gut lining loosens, you get leaky gut.
Yeah.
And leaky gut allows endotoxins to enter your bloodstream that kicks the inflammatory factors up. Still, you stay highly inflamed. And that then contributes to the whole cascade, I won't go into a whole cascade of other steps that contribute to depression.
Mm-hmm.
And so the healthy diet reduced the food directly introducing inflammation, and the healthy diet changed the gut bacteria. So the new gut bacteria cause the junctions in the gut to tighten up, and the leaky gut went away. And then the healthy bacteria produce neurotransmitters like serotonin to help improve your mood.
Yeah.
And so there's a whole cascade of very positive things that happen when you move your diet in a healthy direction. And so, yes, there are certain mental health problems that can be improved and are improved. That's why in our program here, we have a holistic approach, and we're doing things with diet, exercise, rest, sleep, spirituality, the whole landscape of our experience, as well as the psychological things that we need to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
So the faith healing chronic diseases are often related to lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And then chronic diseases and or diseases that don't get healed when people pray for them can cause people to get discouraged. And in fact, I've had patients who have had some chronic disease, and then they pray for healing. The healing doesn't come. They've suffered for many years, and they give up faith. But the disease is directly related to the lifestyle they were living. And rather than looking at the mirror and saying, hey, I continued to eat, you know, junk food every day, never exercise, no wonder my diabetes didn't get better, they get mad at God for not healing their diabetes.
So what role does hope play for people when it comes to, I think, long-term healing journeys, like where you actually have hope that you're, because, and it's an interesting question because my mind goes to Paul, where it's like, did he continue to have hope that whatever it was that he was struggling with, that it would be healed? It wasn't, you know, or.
So my question is, what are they hoping for?
Yeah. Yeah. Is the hope strictly for healing, or is it?
Hope is beneficial if it's in something that's reasonable.
Yeah.
If it is a fictional hope, it's not helpful.
Define a fictional hope.
Well, I hope that tomorrow I'm going to wake up and have my 25-year-old body.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hope that tomorrow I will be able to run fast enough to win the Olympics.
Yeah.
I hope that, you know, you're hoping for something that, oh, I hope my lungs will get better while I continue to smoke.
Yeah.
That's a very realistic fictional hope.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that God will heal me while I continue to abuse my body with drugs. Oh, here's one that I see, actually. I hope my marriage will improve while I look at porn every day.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's a fictional hope.
Yeah. It is. There's a lot of people living.
Or I hope my marriage will improve while I verbally abuse my spouse regularly and talk down to them.
Yeah.
Yell at them.
Yeah. So I guess if we're looking at hope, we're going to take out those, like the fictional hope or the fake hope. Whereas if we're looking at someone that has, say, a legitimate, you know, chronic illness, that, you know, they have the lifestyle stuff in check, they've done all the things that they can, does having hope that then God may step in with, is there anything that shows that is a help?
Define hope for me. See, is hope different than, because I'm processing me and my journey with the things that I've had health issues with and prayed about, I don't know that hope entered.
Yeah.
Hope, my journey has been I want, but I'll trust you with the outcome. Lord, I would love for you to heal this or help with that or reduce my pain there. Yeah. Lord, there's something I need to do that I haven't been doing. Show me what I need to do. If I'm contributing in any way, I would love to stop contributing. Yeah. I'm not aware, but bring me light on that. If there's a procedure that could help, intervention that would help, show me, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
But Lord, if this pain or this problem is somehow necessary for my discipline because I'm going to get arrogant and prideful and not trust you and it's going to bring glory, then it's okay. Just give me the strength to endure. I mean, this is kind of how I pray about things.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as you hear that mindset,
yeah.
Is there hope in there?
Yeah.
Or is there confidence that I can trust him with the journey?
Yeah, I think when you asked the, you know, what is hope or how would you define hope? I guess when I say that, I'm probably thinking more in terms of a trust or belief that he will. In other words,
But that's to me almost magical thinking.
That's what I'm getting at is how would you define a strong biblical hope in that situation? Because I do believe, faith, hope, and love. I mean, these are important things, but when we look at hope, I think sometimes we do think of it, it's more of like a, it's almost magical. It's like if I look at it and I think, well, true hope is I trust and I believe.
I think the hope comes in when we're in a place of suffering.
Yeah.
And our hope is focused on, we know the suffering will end. We don't know when.
Yeah.
And the ultimate hope is what Paul actually put his on, which is the eternal deliverance. And I know many Christian folks who've had some form of suffering, physical health suffering.
Yeah.
They would love to, and they took a position very similar to mine, and they would love for a healing now, and they would be so thankful it happened, but their ultimate hope wasn't that they would get it now, and they were not setting that up for disillusionment. They trusted God, and were looking for purposes and meanings that might dawn on them as to why they were in this position, maybe to minister somebody or so that we talked about. But their ultimate hope was in the second coming and the mortal putting on it immortality. Mm-hmm. That's the ultimate hope that they had.
Yeah, because you hear that a lot. And I think people get, I hear a lot of frustration. And I would say I'm using patients that I talk with here at Honey Lake. We do see a lot of people come in with ongoing physical ailments, things that they're dealing with. And that they've almost lost hope in everything tied to that. In other words, I've prayed for this and I believe that God would heal me and he hasn't. Where is he? And it's almost like it has this destructive nature to it in their own life. And
I'm going to suggest to you, the person you're describing there probably has the preconceived false idea that if they had proper faith, they would be healed.
Exactly.
And so I've had patients like that too. When I have that conversation we had earlier and I walked them through the evidences of scripture that the strong in faith are typically the ones that don't get the miracle for themselves. Mm-hmm. That sometimes they experience a miracle for others in their life. It shifts their whole mindset.
Yeah.
And then you say, and the Lord actually talked about those who follow him will have certain forms of suffering in this earth to endure, In their ongoing trust that it's okay, they trust him with how it goes.
Yeah.
And when that shifts, then they reflect back, can I still trust Jesus if I'm not healed? Can I allow for his sovereign oversight of the future and all the variables in my world that if I could sit on his throne with him today and look down the corridors of time and see how my life and my loved one's life will unfold, that by allowing this to stay on me at this time, it brings a consequence that wouldn't happen otherwise that I would personally want. I just can't see it yet.
Yeah.
See, that's where the trust be. I trust him enough to know he knows what's best. Yet that doesn't diminish our... that doesn't mean that we don't say to him, but Lord, this is what I say all the time. From my perspective, Lord, and I would really like to have this lifted off of me. But Lord, I trust you enough to know that if there's a good reason from your perspective that it's better, it's not, just give me the strength and peace to endure.
Yeah.
And then one day I'm going to get there and I'm going to look at him and I go, wow, Lord, thank you for not lifting that off me. I needed that. Whew. Or my loved one wouldn't have if I didn't, and so forth. There'll be a reason that you personally yourself will thank him for, is my view.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that, actually. And I think it's a very healthy way to look at it. How do you, kind of tied to that same concept, how can believers avoid making, if you do have a chronic illness or you have something that's been this kind of nagging thing in your world for a long time, that you make that your identity? How would you give advice to someone who's dealing with that? Or maybe it's their loved one that's like, man, basically their whole identity is tied up in this illness or in this, chronic going on in their life.
So first I want to clarify that whenever we're in some type of pain, the normal immediate response is for us to have our entire attention drawn to that. Mm-hmm. You ever walk across in the dark in your home and stub your toe? And where does your attention focus on?
Yeah.
And during that moment, Are you aware of how healthy your arms and your eyes and your vision and your and the health of your family? And are you thankful for all those things in that moment?
Not at all.
No, I mean, it doesn't discount any of those things. But when our pain level goes up, it naturally draws our attention to that space. The danger is for us to stay stuck there. It draws our attention there adaptively initially to say, what can I do? What do I need to do? What do I need to resolve this? But when it comes to chronic problems, we can get stuck with the acute response. The acute response, if you stubbed your toe or you cut yourself, is to staunch the bleeding and splint the broken bone to fix the problem. That's why your attention is drawn, to fix the problem.
Yeah.
And then you move on and your attention moves off of it. Mm-hmm. The chronic problem that causes pain, though, can trigger the acute response, where you are constantly focusing on the problem and the relief of the problem. This is in my practice where I've dealt with people who now have chronic pain states because something is not fixable and they're chronically in pain. And so now you're not fixing the cause of the pain like you would a cavity. You fix the cavity, pain goes away. Mm-hmm. Now you're just managing the pain. But they get a mindset is they can't go on with their life until they're no longer in pain. They have the acute response. I need to fix the pain problem before I can go on.
Yeah.
No. They get stuck in this miserable, non-existent, not engaging life. And we have to shift their mindset. You're going to have pain whether you're sitting at home in the couch or whether you go to your grandchild's ball game.
Yeah.
You're going to be in pain in both places. Mm-hmm. I have an intervention that could take 100% of your pain away. Really? What? We can call an anesthesiologist and put you to sleep.
Yeah.
You won't feel any pain.
Yeah.
You also won't function.
Yeah.
And so when in a chronic pain state, there's always the balance between pain relief and function. Mm. The higher the medicine goes to take away the pain, the less function you often are.
Yeah.
And the goal is to find that balance that we reduce the pain enough that you can have maximal function still in spite of pain.
Yeah.
That's the goal.
Quality of life.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
But that makes sense. But the mindset has to shift. Even if you reduce the pain where they could go to the ball game, if their mindset is, I still need to heal this before I can go, then they restrict themselves because they're in the acute. It's a pain problem. My attention is on the pain. And you have to say, nope, my pain is managed. My attention is now on my kids, my life. And you reorient your attention outward.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, any health problem can do that. It doesn't have to be just pain. Any health problem, you can bring the focus. Acutely, new health problem. Know what it is. Yes, needs to take some priority. Go to the doctor. Diagnose. What do I need to fix? What can I resolve? Chronic, okay, how do I manage? And then reorient to the mission the Lord's called me to.
Yeah.
And through the whole thing, you can still pray for healing.
Yeah.
What I want to say to though is maybe as we wind up is another caution though. We believe in a God of miracles. A couple of things I want to say on Les Lyne. We can pray, and sometimes God performs miracles. If you're a person of faith, you are not afraid to examine after the miracle. Meaning, you're a diabetic and you went to a healing ceremony. They laid hands on you and you have been declared healed by the healing minister. Mm-hmm. And you have a very powerful supernatural sense of energy that flows through you and you walk out of there feeling healed. It is not a lack of faith to start checking your blood sugar.
Yeah.
If you've actually healed, then when you check your sugars, they're going to be normal.
Yeah.
But I've seen people do this very thing and they won't check their sugars because they're afraid it would be a lack of faith and they're not trusting. So they refuse to check them. They end up in diabetic ketoacidosis in the ER.
Yeah.
Because they actually weren't healed. If you're genuinely healed, then every time you check, it confirms and you give great praise. Thank you, God. You really healed me.
Yeah.
Okay. But if you're afraid to look, it's telling you that you're really afraid you haven't been healed. Mm-hmm. So if you've had a real healing, yeah, get the examination. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Check it out. The evidence will prove it. Next thing is when it comes to miracles and healing, we have a God of miracles. He can do that. But miracles are counterfeitable.
Yeah.
And just because you see a miracle, and I want to hammer this home to the audience. Just because you see a miracle, and let's say it is an absolute real supernatural event, it doesn't mean God is working there. And it doesn't mean the person who performed the miracle or experienced a miracle is speaking for God.
Yeah.
A serpent spoke in Eden. Mm-hmm. If your dog or cat starts speaking to you, that will be a miraculous event.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's coming from the Lord. It's possible. A donkey spoke to Balaam. That was from the Lord. The serpent, not from the Lord. So we don't put our trust in miracles. We put our trust in the truth. The truth will set you free. And this is what, see, Satan is a supernatural being, and he can do certain types of supernatural wonders, miracles, but he has no truth on his side.
Yeah.
Jesus actually does not need a miracle to establish himself. He only needs you to see reality the way it is and the truth. He's established in reality, in truth.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's such an important point. I mean, when we are in an age where we've definitely had, you know, healings faked and just it's a big racket, usually for money, you know, and just for people to be wise and to discern what this person is teaching, what are they saying? I mean, I've been through these. I mean, years ago, I was a pastor in Lakeland, and we had a guy down there. If people remember, there was a big healing revival down there, and it took me 1 hour of research online. I mean, it was not even hard. These were videos of him, things he had said, I and the Father are one, things like that about himself. And I'm thinking, why is anyone falling for this from within the church? And they were in droves, tens of thousands.
And so answer the question, why? Maybe that would be helpful to answer. Well, reflect, what would make somebody vulnerable to that?
They wanted something to believe in. I think it's part of it.
Okay. So what is the motive of that want? What's driving that want? Yeah. Fear, desperation.
Absolutely is.
So they're desperate and fearful.
They're praying.
So these are vulnerable people, hurting, wounded people. And they want to feel secure. They want to feel safe. They want to feel that someone sees their pain. They want to feel like someone cares.
Mm-hmm.
They want to be whole.
Yeah.
And I almost don't want to say this as a global, but I would say there will be some that will also, this will be true for, and they also don't want to look at themselves and do the hard work of healing.
Yeah.
They want a miracle.
Yeah.
And we see this in patients.
Yeah.
We see this in our, the same dynamic.
From medicine.
Well, that's what I'm about to say.
The miracle pill. I want the miracle shot.
The miracle pill or the miracle shot
to
fix what's broken in me rather than actually taking the time to, in truth, applying God's methods to your heart and mind to heal the actual wounds that have been inflicted through this rough journey of life. And it's painful. And so here's a truism. I've said it many times. Once there's brokenness or woundedness of any kind, there are no pain-free options.
Yeah.
Broken leg, laceration, sutures, splint, physical therapy. There's pain in that process, but it brings healing. Leave it alone. Don't touch it. You don't avoid pain. It gets worse. People get that with a physical wound, but it's true with the emotional and spiritual wounds too.
Mm-hmm.
Once that wound is there, you don't have a pain-free option. You only have healing or not healing. But when it comes to physical wounds, spiritual and psychological heart wounds, most people try to avoid the pain and find something that comforts them rather than pursuing healing. To pursue healing, you're going to have to face the rejection, the abandonment, the abuse, not the physical moment of it, but what happened inside you, how it got internalized. The wounds in here have to be dealt with in truth to bring healing to the heart. Medicating something or escaping through intoxicants of some kind so that you just feel relief doesn't heal anything.
Yeah.
And so people want the pain to go away, and they're not wrong for that. That's righteous. I don't want to hurt.
Yeah.
Good. But understand reality. The only way, if you've been wounded, that the pain truly goes away is if you heal it, and the only way to heal it is to deal with it, and that's usually painful.
Yeah. Yeah. How often do you see that with people that are, you know, legitimately, you know, victims of something, but also, and I guess I would tie to that, people that almost, their identity becomes being a victim, you know, to where,
so that's,
you know, what I'm getting at?
No, I do, and they take a position.
And it's sad, and it's hard to see, you know, and I feel for people going through that. It's just...
And they won't do well in that position,
yeah.
But they stay in that position for a variety of reasons. One, they don't know how. It's familiar. It's routine.
Yeah.
Two, they've learned through the compassionate that if they put themselves out there as wounded and broken, they will get a lot of comfort.
Yeah, a lot of attention.
Well, attention can sound, you know, more childish.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. It's actually, they're getting a lot of comfort.
Yeah.
Their heart is hurting. They haven't actually come to wholeness inside. They don't have a sense of healthy identity. They don't have a great confidence and peace with themselves because of the wounds of the past. They didn't do this to themselves. They were broken, and those broken pieces do not cause a whole healthy happiness inside. And so they're looking outside themselves for someone to show them value, someone to show love. And when the compassionate show that with only compassions without truth, just caring, it can collude with the position of developing an identity of a victim. I'm broken and I'll always be broken. Just comfort me and hold me.
Yeah.
But true Christ-like compassion is like he did for the woman caught in adultery. He showed her great compassion and great love and great acceptance and also directed her to go and sin no more. This was not, he was not saying in those words, go and don't break any more rules.
Yeah.
He was saying in the context of design law, do you understand what you're doing is damaging yourself? You're taking yourself out of, you're actively taking yourself out of harmony with what brings joy. You're undermining your own self-esteem, your own self-worth. You're betraying yourself. You're encoding into your own self guilt and shame. It's hurting you to do this. Go and live a healthy life is what he's actually saying.
Yeah.
Because he can't make that choice for her. I will love you no matter what, but if you go back and do that, I'll still love you. You'll still get worse and worse and worse.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is true compassion. I love you and direct you to how to live a better life.
Yeah.
And then encourage and support them while they do. Well, hope this program was helpful for you. If you have questions, send those in to questions@designformore.net. Questions@designformore.net. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for joining us on Designed for More, brought to you by Come and Reason Ministries and Honey Lake Clinic. Also, don't forget to check out our other podcasts for more inspiring content.